I'm Kay Bess, and this is The Beehive. Women in voiceover, the voices of the fairer sex that keep the wheels of commerce and creativity moving in this country. Voices you hear every day, but names you likely don't know until now. Hey everybody, welcome to The Beehive. My guest today is the quintessential journey woman voice actor, Mary Weiss. Mary has a career in voiceover spanning more than two decades. She's done all kinds of national spots and campaigns over the years, as well as video games such as Mafia 3 and Guild Wars, promos and narration and all kinds of stuff. She does both commercial and theatrical on-camera work as well, and her acting roots are 1,000% rooted in the theater. So I got to say that Mary is probably the prototype woman in voiceover that I was thinking of when I started this podcast. Her voice, and I'm sure her face, if this were a webcast, would be familiar to you. My goodness, she is distinct and ubiquitous in voiceover and theatrical and commercial on camera. Yet I'm fairly sure that her name is new to you. So this is a particularly special podcast to me, and I'm just so pleased to welcome Mary Weiss. Yay. So happy to have you here. I've known you for a very long time. We've just danced in circles around each other.
In different venues, too.
In different places. Writing. Mm-hmm. Jack Grapes, Method Writing. Oh, I forgot about that. You know, as I was reviewing your history in getting ready for this podcast, I was totally struck by the story of you in Chicago starting out and having an agent who essentially told you that you should hang it up in voiceover. Mm-hmm. And that you were just beginning voiceover at that time, right? Because you have a history in the theater. Yeah. And you have a pretty varied career, both on camera commercially and on camera theatrically. And what you did from there and how you found your footing in voiceover, you know, nobody wants to hear from their agent that that you should hang it up. But I love what transpired. So I would love to just start with that story.
From my perspective.
Yes, yours, which is the most important one in your story.
Well, I have a master's degree, you know, and when I first went to get my—
In theater?
Yes, MFA in theater from the University of Nebraska, Lincoln. Go Huskers. You know, I actually thought I was going to go into teaching. And actually for 1 year, there's a private college outside of Chicago called Barra. Uh-huh. And I taught voice and movement for the actor for 1 year there. And I thought that's what I was going to do. I really loved teaching voice. But I ended up in Chicago doing theater, and everyone kept saying, you have such a great voice. And, you know, I don't know about you, but the training programs I came through so many years ago were really focused on performance.
All yes.
That. There was nothing like either on camera or voiceover classes or even marketing, headshots, how to talk to an agent. None of that.
Nothing.
Oh, my God. The learning curve was painful.
Yeah.
Just
painful. And you are learning on the job.
Oh,
for
my
sure.
God. Yeah. Yeah. And making some mistakes, which, you know, agents will let you know, which is what happened is I was doing theater and somebody had, again, one too many times, they're like, you should look into voiceover. I was pretty broke. I'm like, okay. You know, I wasn't quite hitting yet on camera.
Yeah.
I've always been kind of a character actress, but I have a really young face. So, like, I even wasn't even old enough to do moms in my 20s because I had this sort of big presence. So I thought I'd get started, and I dabbled a little bit, and I kind of lucked into a good agent from the get-go. But like I said in my email, I said she was rather brusque, to put it nicely.
Yeah.
And after a few months, she's like, yeah, I don't know if you can do this. Because what it was is you know, you and I both know, and we both teach and coach. It is a whole different skill set.
Yeah.
And I just didn't know that.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
And one of the things, I say this to my students, that a lot of times what you're learning in that learning curve of trying to figure out your skill set, where you are, not just in the marketplace and the whole marketing my voice, but also your instrument? Yeah. What does your instrument do? And also, what are your habits? 26 years into this, and I'm still a fast talker. You know, I love that there are some casting directors who know me and they're like, okay, Mary, this one's going to have to be slow.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay.
I am the same. I've been instructed on even a couple video games. It's like, could you just leave a little space between takes?
I did that too recently where I was like booking.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So I didn't know how to slow down. I often tell students, I'm like, please stick with it because there's a learning curve. I'm like, the first year I decided to do it, I really sucked.
Yeah.
Because there were just so many bad habits. There were the stage habits. There were all these other, you know. Yeah, I reached a point. This woman, first she said, okay, I'm only going to send you on things that are like one or two lines. That seems to be all you can handle.
Oh my God.
And I think I booked one or something. And then I went in one day and she's like, I don't know if you've got the chops for this. I mean, you just can't seem to, blah, whatever, you know. But she said it in a much more brusque kind of way.
Yeah.
And she recommended I go see this guy and for a coaching, a private coaching. And I hadn't really taken a class. So I went and I sat with him and he went, I don't know what her problem is. He goes, frankly, I think you're terrific. He goes, you got to learn to slow down. And also, and he said this great thing. He's like, you're doing a little bit. Kay can see my hand just kind of coming up over
yeah.
my head.
Yeah.
It's this thing of it's not a voice that you put on. It has to come from my voice.
Yes, yes, yes.
And I just, like, that little light bulb went off.
Yeah.
As opposed to it being a stage voice that we sometimes do and we put on. You know,
And we're reaching for the back row and, you know.
Just, you know, like, bringing my point of view, which, you know, we start to learn what our point of view, you know,
yes.
what is that thing that is very much Kay, which is very much, you know, a Mary yeah. Weiss Reed, which years later, all the folks from, you know, Elaine and all the
yeah.
other casting folks are like, you know, it's so such a Mary Read. You
yeah,
know?
Yeah, yeah.
Which isn't uniquely me. There are others who have it. And yet in some ways it is.
Well, but I'll also say that when I hear you, I know it's you. I know that it's you. I mean, truly, yours is a voice that is really unique. There's no one that sounds like you. I've never been wrong. You know, when I'm listening to you and I go, that's very wise.
Oh,
and I know it's you. You know, I just, so.
I'm like, thank you so much.
So
you know, this guy told me that, and he just said, hang in there. Just, you know, just sort of hang in there. And then he also recommended I talk to another agent. In Chicago, you could be sort of multi-listed.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I don't remember. It was a long time ago. Whether I was really multi-listed at the time or I don't think I was exclusive with this woman. So I went and talked to another big agency. And I got a little lucky. I am not a marketer. I'm not a glad hander. I am so, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But
that's another skill set entirely.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And, you know, he recommended to go talk to Linda at, you know, Harice Davidson at the time.
Uh-huh.
And I sat with her for a bit and she said, she goes, I really don't tell many people to get into VO, but I just listening to your voice, I want to give you a chance. And I don't know if the poor first agent who just sort of got me during my green years, but like I started to sort of work with Linda a little bit. And when I called this other agent to say I was leaving with her, she just went, good, all right. Like she just couldn't really care.
Oh my God, that's great.
So I, you know, I started to work with Linda, and that's when I kind of cobbled together a tape, a demo tape. Actually,
It was truly a tape.
It was. My first was a cassette tape.
Yeah, yeah.
And what I loved about Chicago, it was funny when I came out to Los Angeles, is everyone's tapes were so plain. They were just like
in Chicago or
no,
here?
No, here.
Here. Oh,
here.
Okay.
It was just sometimes, to me, at least I thought I just saw, you know, I was seeing it at my agents at the time, just like, you know, their names on a
yeah,
just
a label. And,
but in Chicago, yeah. It was elaborate. People were like doing, you know, and I came
artwork,
up with this
yeah.
fabulous Lichtenstein, you know, artwork. Anyway, so I put together my first demo and I decided I needed to get some feedback. I think I also said, you know, in addition to that agent, I also had a roommate at the time who was really taking off in VO. And we're really old-time friends, but still, sometimes at that age, you know, you're 28,
yeah.
you're trying to get started, and she's, you know, and she, in this vein of, like, trying to be supportive, it'd be like, well, you know, you're getting better. You're like, thanks.
Thank you.
Anyway, I'm not even sure how, you know, how the thought came to me, but there was a woman who had been an agent and had gone on, moved over to DDB Needham. And
advertising agency. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Big agency in Chicago. And I just reached out and said, could you take 5 minutes and tell me what you think of the tape. Because she'd always been very supportive.
Yeah, yeah.
Peggy, can I say her name?
Sure.
Peggy Walter over at, well, she was at DDB. Thing is, she's still very friendly with my agent, Eric Seastrand, over
at
William Morris. But
that's fabulous. So she's still in advertising.
Yeah. And again, you know, I tell, you know, the folks who, you know, when I sort of coach or teach or just talk, you know, sometimes people just ask you to share your experience.
Yeah,
And I'm like, you know, take those chances. Do them well. Do them professionally.
Yeah.
Don't do them badly. But take those opportunities when you can, because you don't know where they're going to lead.
Yeah.
And sure enough, I went and I stood with Peggy. We didn't even sit. Stood there. She gave me some feedback. And then she had to run off to a meeting and I left. And I got a phone call, not even a couple hours later, that said, can you go down to this recording studio and audition for Yoplait? It turned out that Peggy'd gone in there and they were looking for a woman's voice. And they basically described me. And Peggy said, I think I know someone. And my second stroke of luck was that when I went down to the studio, I got a great engineer who he and I played. We did like 9 takes until we found like 3 or 4 really good ones, sent them. And it was my first, I booked it. I did it for the next 4+ years, multiple spots. And as you know,
a campaign. Yeah.
And, you know, just like boom, exploded, which was great because it's sort of, you know, Linda was right to, you know, give me that extra shot.
And
but as you know, when you go, you know, from there, actually not too long after, I ended up in New York doing this stage play called The Real Life Brady Bunch. And I end up
playing Alice. So awesome.
I mean, literally, can I just, you know, going back, so that happened in like July of 1991. And the beginning of 1991, I was working as a temp and was really broke. Like so very broke.
Yeah.
And my temp service had called and said, you know, we love you, but we're getting some complaints. We're wondering if you can smile on the job.
Oh,
and I said, no, I can't. I hate it. And they said, well, how about if we just send you on 1 or 2 day assignment? So I did. I did like 1 or 2 day assignments.
Yeah.
And I picked up some catering, but I was really broke. And in April, I booked my first national commercial on camera, got my SAG card. Then the voiceover thing happened in July, booked Yoplait. And then in September, I was in the Brady Bunch. I was in New York doing the Brady Bunch, and I never worked another support job again. It was like
an awesome year.
It was like literally, it wasn't consciously leaping off the...
Yeah.
But it was just sort of like the universe sort of going, okay, it's time. I don't know. It was just...
There's so much that happens when you decide to act. I mean, I think that whole process of you putting together a tape and then going, you know, I'm going to step out. That's amazing. What comes from it? You know, it's really quite remarkable, I think.
Well, and it becomes, then what happened, of course, is, you know, in New York and in Los Angeles, then, you know, that became a calling card.
Yes.
You know, you come out here, I don't know what, you know, when you first came out, I remember I was with Talent Group, TGI, at the time.
Very, sure.
You know, kind of smaller.
Yeah.
And I was supposed to go see one of the casting directors who's still around, whose name shall remain unsaid.
Between us.
Yes, right. Because I guess when they said they wanted to put me on this, you know, audition, she went, I don't know who that is. And and so they had to say, she's the one doing the Yoplait campaign. And she went, all right, I'll listen to her. And I used this voice because then when I went, I did what you're supposed to do. I brought my demo.
Yeah.
And she went, I don't want that.
Oh, I know exactly who you're talking about.
Like, okay then. But you know, that opened the campaign opened doors.
Yes.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Although I don't, you know, I feel like my first 10 years in voiceover was me just sort of blathering about. Like I didn't really, I don't know, things happened and you know, and I got work and I just feel like I was, I don't know. I felt like I was not at the helm of my own career. I was just sort of going where the wind pushed me, you know? So it's only in hindsight that I look back and I go, oh, maybe that happened because I did this or, you know, but I do feel very much like I don't think it's been until the last 3 or 4 years that I've really understood the need, at least now, to really market and to really brand yourself. And I started maybe 5 years before you, you know, like 1985 or so here in Los Angeles.
You were a youngster.
Yeah. But I still, even in 1991, I still feel like I don't know, it was just kind of an underground profession in the realm of acting, and really kind of bottom rung in a certain sense, that you know, there was a time when a celebrity would never do a voiceover, let alone a commercial, you know, like never. And so the idea of having women as spokespeople, and that was kind of just coming into vogue,
just
right?
Barely. No cars, no promo. I didn't even think about promo until...
No, and what a great promo voice you have.
Well, a friend of mine helped launch Oxygen, so I was the first voice for Oxygen.
Oh, yeah, that's great.
Yeah, they had a little trouble with their payroll, so I, you know...
Did you end up not getting paid for things?
It took a while, and then my friend's like, I'm not going to bring you back until I can know for sure. And I was also narrating a show of hers, which she did. It was a great show called Girl in the Picture. So she would do these fabulous... She did like a Marlene Dietrich movie, and she would do these little interstitials talking about great stories about Marlene Dietrich or something.
Oh, wow.
Dietrich. When I stopped doing it, they actually just used people in the office. I mean, that's kind of where they were at that first. I'm sure they're better now. I can't say. My friend left, though. She actually left when she found out that they were paying the male producers more than the female producers.
Yeah.
And it was supposed to be the women's network.
Isn't that just,
But that's
well, we know what that is.
Yeah. Were you here when you started?
Yes. I've always been here. Yeah. I grew up in Goleta and came here to LA to go to acting school at USC, and I was there for 2 years and then dropped out and took a voiceover class and I never looked back.
And the rest is history.
Yeah, as they say. But it really was one of those things where I just, doors opened and I walked through them. I mean, I don't know how else to put it. You know,
you said something earlier about, you know, how much you feel like you're at the effect, that you just sort of do where people lead you.
Yeah.
But it is the walking through the door.
Yeah, sure. You know? Yeah, absolutely.
It's people going, you know, why don't you do this? And you're like, okay.
All right.
Sure.
That's familiar, you know.
I'll give that a shot.
Yeah. You have such an interesting career to me that is not just voiceover. So many people that I've interviewed here, I mean, voiceover has been that's what they started with. That's what they want to do. It's all that, you know, on camera stuff is anathema to them. And I can't, and it's a little bit to me as well. But I think that just your whole acting background, your stage background, on camera, theatrical and commercial, it's all of a piece, it seems to me, with you. It is a well-rounded acting career. I just think it's great. Y'all need to check out Mary's IMDb page, because I know you'll recognize her. Very familiar and distinct look and very distinct sound.
Can I just say my first agent, talk about agents, my first agent in Chicago said, you're definitely going to work commercially because you're non-threatening attractive. Did you? It's one of my favorite things.
Because you're non-threatening attractive.
It's like you're cute, but you don't scare people with it.
So. I love that.
Right? And then she told me to lose 15 pounds. So,
you know, it's so funny. We learned to like, so much of it is, you know, learning to just accept the people that we are, you know, and that everybody, I think that's the thing that has been why I've been so averse to on camera and theatrical stuff, not to stage. That's different to me, but there's like this, I just don't fit in the box of like the skinny, classically pretty girl.
The funny thing is, though, and I'm going to coach here for a moment.
Thank you, please.
Okay. The box is completely, it's gone in many ways.
I agree. I agree.
There are two things that are going on. First of all, the diversity and ethnic ambiguity. Ethnically ambiguous, which isn't us. But what we do have is that they want real looking people.
Yes.
And the other advantage right now, as opposed to perhaps 10 years ago, if we had been this age, and I can't say, I suspect I'm older than you are.
No, I don't think so.
This was 10 years ago. It might have just been beginning, but we are benefiting from the baby boomers.
Yeah.
So
yes.
Commercials now can reflect, whereas I think 10, 15, 20 years ago when I started, my age would have been grandma or quirky aunt or something like that.
Yeah.
Whereas now we're like parents of adult kids. Even, you know, I have good friends who had their first kids at 42. You know,
that's me.
Right. So, you know, at our age, we have teenagers.
And right.
So commercials reflect that. So we're getting a bit more shelf life, for lack of a better, you know, out of that, you know, which, and what comes with that too, is this, like, I don't, we're, yes, I do sometimes the weight and stuff, you know, a little bit,
it's constant.
But can I just say, every time I go to an audition, for maybe a second, I'm like, oh, they look bad. Oh, I don't, I just, you don't have the energy anymore.
Yeah. 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 I totally get that. And I really, I think I'm really expressing a viewpoint that I had 20 years ago, which is what prevented me from going in that direction. I can't wait. I was like, I don't even know if I should say this, so this may end up on the cutting floor, but forever, I mean, I'm 5'6", and forever I've been like, well, you know, in my 20s, I weighed like 123 pounds. And so I keep thinking, well, that should be my goal. You know, like, I should really try to sort of get, like, why it's a reasonable weight. There are women who are 5'6" and they weigh 110, you know, so what's 125, you know? And then I remember, I go, oh, but I was doing a lot of cocaine at the time and smoking 3 packs of cigarettes. Like, I didn't eat. So it's not reasonable. Okay. Oh, the 80s were horrible, horrible time. Wait,
so I had this thing. I'm 5'9" and I'm not a small gal. You know, I'm broad shouldered. And I had it in my head, like 135.
Right.
Can I just tell you, all through my 20s, if I could get below 145, I was lucky. And if I did, people started to worry about me. 145 was like good fighting weight. That's just how I was built.
Yeah, right.
But I had this number in my head. And I remember, I think I was sitting with some friends, and there may have been some, you know, hallucinogenics or things involved. Who knows? I do not. Well,
no, we do not recommend this, kids. Just saying.
But we were watching a Miss Universe pageant and making fun of it. And I kept hearing 5'9", 128 pounds, 5'9", 135 pounds. I went, that's where I got it.
Yeah.
Where else would I get this arbitrary number?
Arbitrary numbers.
And yet,
yes,
there it was. And it didn't fit.
Yeah. I'm the same. I mean, it doesn't fit me. I'm built like my dad. I'm like, I build muscle really easily. I'm like, you know, that's not me. I can, 125 is drug induced. That's it. That's it. It's terribly, terribly unhealthy time. But I was thin. You know, what a crazy, crazy time. I do actually, if I might segue,
sure.
I do feel like voiceover was my way out of that.
Absolutely.
My way out of this self-destruction, the self-destructive thinking about how I had to look and how I had to be acceptable, to be desired, to be wanted, you know? And I think that's why I have viewed it for so long as, like, I with such gratitude about what it kind of rescued me from in a strange way, you know, because it was crazy. And that's when I began, like, in the mid 1980s, I took a workshop. Nobody had workshops back then. Nobody.
Well, nobody was really, I mean, when I was in Chicago, now Chicago was a big voiceover community.
Yes.
So it was actually a great, there's so many ad agencies there.
Yes.
So I had some friends who were doing it, and initially it was just like a way to make money, because remember, I was really broke, you know?
Yeah. I think that's how a lot of people viewed it. This is what I'm going to do to make some money while I cultivate this other career. My theater career.
When I got my master's degree, I wasn't even planning to necessarily pursue a career in acting. And I certainly wasn't thinking I was going to end up in commercials or television, God forbid. I had aspirations of, you know, Shakespeare. I joke all the time that, you know, I wanted to do Shakespeare or work on the Steppenwolf stage and stuff like that. You know, and then your big break comes playing Alice in the Brady Bunch.
So great.
Which you kind of go, you know what? Who cares what it looks like?
You know what I find kind of interesting? You've done video game work.
Yeah.
Is it work that you enjoy? Do you like it?
I do. I actually love video games. I video and animation, because it's creating characters.
And, exactly.
You know, as much as I do enjoy the on-camera stuff, and to me, it's also partly about multiple income streams.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, there's a lot of times when I know that what I look like or my size or whatever, you know, is the thing that doesn't get me the job. You know, it's funny how they always say, you know, don't take it personally. And I will tell people, well, you do take it personally, because they are not hiring you because you're of a certain, you know.
Yeah.
But you can't have it be something personal that is about you. It's kind of similar, you know.
Yeah.
When you meet someone, they're just like, well, I just don't really, you know, there's something about you that they don't like. It's like, well, that's about them. That's not about you. With voiceover, Oh my God, the things you can do.
The things you can do.
I never get to do. I was doing a video game years ago. I was playing one of the, it was like Carrie Ann Moss from Matrix was the prototype for
it. Yeah.
And I did her voice for the main character in the game. But I got done and toward the end they said, we hate to ask you, but we have like 12 lines. Can you do an old Russian lady? And you're like, where do I get to do an old Russian lady who, you know, come up with radio voice, you know, like find radio, find Russian voice, you know, sort of like play a little bit, you know.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah.
That's so great.
That's
I know. Well, the reason I sort of bring that up is because when I started sort of on this little adventure toward video games and stuff, which has not been for very long, I mean, like maybe 3 years ago, I started after this, you know, and I had done, when video game work first started happening, I think I got sent on jobs. I've done games. I don't even know what they are. I have no idea. But it was a long, long time ago.
It's listed on IMDb, though.
It's not.
It's not?
No, there are a couple games that aren't, that are not listed. And there's just one from that time, which is Dead Space. But it's... But there were a couple others that I did that I just... They're just sort of nowhere. I don't know where they are.
There's video game, you know... aficionado geeks lists of
it's crazy
everything you've done
and some I just think this was so early it just I don't know but I stepped away from it back then because I was like screaming is like oh I don't want to hurt my voice and you know all that but a few years ago my agent suggested that I just do a private coaching session with a guy named Zach Hanks. I don't know if you know Zach.
I know Zach.
Yeah. And he, like, you know, like this person with you who sort of said one thing that and a light bulb went on. It was the same with video games because I was like, how do you know whether or not, you know, I mean, there's accented work and what's the language like and what, you know, and he essentially said that there are really two styles. There's the fantasy games, and then there's sort of Call of Duty, War, you know, which are very sort of American, if you will. The language is a little slopped up, and it's more natural in its approach. And he said fantasy games are like the Shakespeare of the video game world. So the language is a little more elevated. You might use there might be a mid-Atlantic sort of approach if you're a queen, or you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that image of just him saying Shakespeare, it's the Shakespeare of, it was like, oh. And something just clicked with me that I sort of understood that this is theater. I almost feel silly in that it's so obvious to me now, you know, what it is, character development, relationships, dramatic storylines and arcs and all of that stuff. But I think I was stuck in this idea of thinking this is about my voice, you know, and it isn't. It's just not. I mean, yes, of course, you bring in those particular skills, but it's really about your acting skills.
It's
you know?
Acting chops. That's what I'll tell people.
Yes.
When, you know, I often do like sort of intro to voiceover, you know, just to give folks. And I say video games, you need acting chops.
Yeah.
Like really need acting chops for that. And it has to be instantaneous.
Yeah.
You know, I did.
Being brave, making choices.
I did Mafia 3 mm-hmm. back at the beginning of the year, and it's a very immersive, it's a world, you know, mm-hmm. and I was just playing this woman on the street. But what I loved about this is I was doing this kind of New Orleans. I remember when I auditioned, I was in my little ISO booth, and I was like, oh my God, they had described like this very gothic-y Southern, and I'm like, I'm going to do my best, Tennessee Williams, I swear to God.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Sometimes you think, oh, it's a little too much, but, you know, I had so much fun with it, though, and that was, it was a little bit like that. It was, you know, but I had this British guy coaching me on how to do, like, New Orleans Southern.
Oh my God, that's fantastic.
But it was great, isn't it? But he had been coaching everybody,
sure.
So there was a sound to, you know. But
to the world, yeah.
But again, you know, the lines are coming at you very quickly. You're sometimes doing one or two takes of it, and, you know.
And moving on. And it's crazy.
I have to say, I kind of love that, like, what you get is, you know, this is between a 1 and a 5. This is a 3, you know. You're excited, you know. There's a part of me that I think from, first of all, us doing this for so long, but even television, I'm not thrown by being given even a TV script or something thrown at me. I know how to make like an instant decision. I know how to read a script really quickly
into it. Yes.
And I love the instantaneousness of like dropping into whatever emotion they need.
Yeah.
I think without the camera having to worry about what I call, it's funny, what I call smell the turd acting. which for me is like I've done quite a few roles where it's like I went through this series where I did like four roles in a row where it was like tragic mom, you know, without a trace, my daughter was kidnapped, and then I was like, and then ER, my daughter died, and then it was Boston Legal, my daughter was dying of anorexia.
Oh.
And in two of them, they do these kind of close-ups. I'm like, oh my God, I'm doing smell the turd acting, which is, it's a joke. They actually end up using it on Friends. Joey Tribbiani uses you know, those close-ups where you look like you're going to cry, but it really looks like, you know, it's like, just imagine there's a nasty smell. Yeah. So there's times when, like, you know, to get the emotion up on camera, but it's got to be a little more organic and stuff like that. And I just don't watch what I do. I'm like, if I try, it's like, if they like it, fine, great. Give me the paycheck. I had a good time. Super. Yeah, I don't need to watch myself.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe that's a little denial.
But it's probably just really, really healthy.
Because I watch, I'll go, oh gosh, that you're doing smell the turd. I have to call my friends and go, was it really? They're like, you were fine. You were great. But I don't worry about that on camera.
Yeah.
You can do whatever you need to do.
Yeah, with voiceover. Yeah, exactly.
To just get the voice. Yeah. Yeah. Did I say on camera? I meant voice. Yeah. The voice step, which is why I really enjoy it.
I got a call Tuesday about 1 o'clock. Are you available to do a video game, few characters in a video game, at five? You know, I'm like, yeah, sure. You know, I emailed back and I said, what, do you have my audition? Like, I just so I know what I'm.
It's a month.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Or more.
Yeah. And they wrote me back and said, you didn't audition. They just asked for you. And that was the first time that's ever happened. There were for, you know, some incidental characters. And but I realized driving over there, like, wow, I have no idea what I'm going to do. You know, I don't know if they're going to ask me for an accent. I don't know if I'm going to be a monster. I don't know if I'm going to be a queen. I don't know if I'm going to be a little blue seedling. You just don't know. And I kind of thought for the first time, like, and I am not worried. A few years ago, I would have been like, oh my God, I don't know what to do. You know, like, what is it? Can anybody give me some information, please? And there really isn't. No, there's no information to be had. There's just them telling you what you're going to do and giving you that scale, you know, and giving you context. He happened to be a great director. And so it all works. And so it is. It's all that. Are you willing? Are you willing? Like, are you willing to just play? Are you willing to experiment? And you feel like you're in the hands of someone who has, you know, they've got you, you know,
they asked for you.
And I know.
That means they know, either they know what you're capable of, or they called your agent and said, we need a good actress.
Yeah.
Who's got this, you know,
and can do that. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, that's happened to me, not for video games, but there's been quite a few times at, you know, William Morris where they'll say, can you send us some suggestions for like your best gals or your, you know, guys and gals, you know, and sometimes they just ask for three. They go and listen to our reels and then they come back and go, okay.
Yeah.
And that's your agent also saying,
sure,
they're capable of doing this.
Yes. Which is fantastic.
Having said that though, I recently reprised a character for a fairly big franchise called Guild Wars. And this is Guild Wars 2. And
there was a big span of time in between, right?
10 years since I first did this character. She's been gone. And this is how much I don't always understand how video games work. They like new packaging and then release
downloadable
it.
Content.
Yes.
And
So this is a new chapter and they're bringing this character back.
Wow.
So I get the...
That's so great they called you back.
So my, you know, they're like, you know, you're doing this. And I'm like, oh my gosh. And, you know, so I trust that they'll, you know, they'll know and they'll have... you know, copies of what I had done before and, you know, cool. 2 to 4 was the time I was supposed to do it. I had no idea that I was the character for this installment.
Wow.
It was massive. And I have to say, I kind of wish I'd had a heads up. I mean, first of all, it was like late in the day. So your voice is, I mean, if I'd kind of known, I don't know if I could have been prepared for just the sheer volume of work. And
yes,
I think, as I wrote to you, it had been a long time since I'd done like fights and effort. I had really, for some reason, a lot of the games, I'm often sort of either I've been like, One of the shows, one of the games I was Rockaway Venus, which is basically you click on this, that wherever in the room that you're in, there's a Venus painting. I'm always using my hands, Kay's like,
that's okay. No, I'm like, I'm totally following you. Yeah.
You would get information. So I'm often information, or I'm reporter, or, you know, or person on the street, that kind of thing. You know. It's been a long time since I've done like.
You're like a great utility player, right? Yeah. That you can do all these various roles that. You know, it's not easy. It's not easy work to do.
No, but it can be. I did a, what was it? It was one of the TV game shows, and they did a video game version of it. And I just remember I had to do like four different characters, and like I had to pull out my Boston, you know, just like, let me see if I can get a good Boston accent going on. You know, that kind of stuff. Or, you know, those were always very fun. But this one, I just, you know. It was really fun. I certainly enjoyed it. But he put me through my paces, the director did.
Yeah.
I don't think I've really done a job where, like, he wanted, sometimes it was five and six reads of one line, you know, which I know the folks listening, they're like, well,
what's the problem?
Yeah, exactly. Because sometimes they're very taxing and it's exhausting and you've just done this huge, thick, you know, book of dialogue. But, you know, he apologized and we took plenty of breaks and stuff. I was 5.5 hours. I was actually there.
That is a long session.
But he even said, he goes, she's just, you know, we haven't seen her in a while. We know that the fans like her. We really, so it's just really important. So I hope you don't mind. I'm like, I kind of pride myself. You know, we all have some ego, of course, but I don't have that much ego. Tell me what you want. I've never, early on, you learn in voiceover that sometimes you get people who are directing you who have no idea how to talk to actors, who have no idea how to get a read out of you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, you know, you have to learn quickly that if they give you a reading, a line reading, it's like, great.
Yeah.
We'll just get to the end of this quicker.
Yeah, exactly.
Because the way I think of it is like, you're hearing it in your head a certain way.
Yeah.
And I can't hear it how you hear it in your head. So just let me hear it how you
hear it.
Exactly.
I am totally with you. Like, I've never been offended by a line reading.
Nope.
You know, I do look at it like some people have a skill to be able to put into words what they're hearing in their head, and most don't. And so, it's true. It's like, can we just cut to the chase? I'm not going to be offended if you give me a line
reading.
Have you
done that? I've said that. I'm like, look,
too.
I think you're hearing it a certain way. So why don't you just tell me how you hear it? And let me see if I can, you know, do it that way.
Yeah. And sometimes they just need to hear you do what they're thinking to realize what they're thinking isn't going to work.
Exactly.
I know. That's a funny thing.
If I'm being really honest with myself, that session that I just did, I don't know, a month or so ago. Oh, wait, was it? Sorry. Kay and I were talking earlier about like loss of time. Honestly have like completely lost track of time. I don't know if I did this because right now this year was very interesting. I actually broke my leg back in May.
Oh my God.
While hiking up in the Angeles Forest, not too far from here. And I was completely out. I mean, like on the bed, can't move the leg. So I can't remember if I did this one before or after the broken leg. Everything is kind of like.
You did it this year.
Was that before? Yeah. And I know at one point, the director, I was doing all the efforts I was doing. I mean, this character died so many different ways. I was doing something and he stopped us and he went, you know, you're really doing this thing. And he called me out on this physicalization I was doing to try to get the sound, which he said was going to be hurting me more, hurt my voice more. Mm. And he was absolutely right. And I was, I like had this moment, instantaneous moment of embarrassment. Because part of me is like, you should know better.
Yeah, yeah.
You really should know better, Mary. But at the same time, it had been so long since I'd done it.
Yeah.
It was 5 hours in.
Yeah.
I was exhausted. And it was like, let me just get these sounds out.
Yeah.
And that also is part of what is about the interactive is, you know, we reach a fatigue point.
Yeah. And I don't care how trained you are.
Exactly.
You know.
I mean, it's always hard, you know, how many times to try to explain to people. I love that my family knows how this business works. So, you know, nobody else like, whoa, you know, complaining because we spent an hour in the booth or whatever.
Right, right.
You know, but this is physically taxing.
Yeah.
Trying to explain to people why doing a 2-3 hour Broadway show is physically taxing. Our bodies, when we drop into these emotions, even instantaneously, our bodies think we're going through much of
this. Yes, sure.
Okay?
Yes.
My body doesn't think I'm really being run through with a sword. But we put a lot of stress on our, what is it, the endocrine, whatever.
But all I know is at that relatively short session, I had sweat dripping down my back, you know, and you go, wow. And the room is air conditioned and it's not hormones, you know? I mean, it was just like, wow, I'm working, you know?
And, really working. I'm working.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's fascinating, but I do love it so. I just think it's really made this, I don't know, I don't want to say second half of my career, but I, you know, spent so long in the commercial promo world that this does feel like a whole new life. It feels like a...
But that's great, though.
It's fantastic. It's great. I just love it.
Well, you know, you talk about like the second half of our careers, third half, whatever act we're in.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the business has changed exponentially. Oh, and yeah. More than even just, you know, technology. Let's go back 6, 10 years. Technology started changing. We started seeing a huge influx of more people being able to do it.
Yeah.
More agencies opening. But now even the last 3, 4 years, like it's changed so much. We've all had to sort of... You know, you have to catch up. You have to see what's going on. You know, and we have to adapt, reinvent,
reimagine
yeah. any of those things. And if yeah. you find, you know, if you find a place where you're landing, it's like, you know, go for it.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
there's plenty, you know, 26 plus years, whatever. And there's I hate to say regrets, but there's plenty of times where I'm like, why didn't I pursue this more?
Yeah. Sure.
Why didn't I go there more? You know, you talk about promo. I had lots of little opportunities early on and none of them stuck. And I remember I was, I don't know if I can call her out. I think she'd be okay with it. But remember I was helping out with, it was the women's promo committee. It was many years ago. And at Promax, they were going to do a...
Right. Yeah, yeah. I remember this.
It was quite a while ago.
Yeah.
So Bernadette Sullivan and I were there.
Yeah.
And there was this big, you know, there was a panel and we were all there.
Oh, was this in LA?
Yeah.
It was in LA. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I totally remember.
Right.
Yeah.
Long time ago.
Yeah. Right.
So it's over. And here are some of the heavy hitters in female promo who are up there glad handing and talking to the panelists and being very, you know, and Bernadette and I are standing in the back. We're like, we really should go talk to people.
I know.
Most of the promo stuff I've even done in the last 10 years have come from friends who I know in the promo world. And I had a good friend at Fox and he loves me, but he's only used me a few times
because
he's like, first of all, he goes, I've tried to pitch you. He goes, it's hard to get new people in. He goes, you know, the one campaign, he got me in on a small campaign for, I forget what the show was. It was really fun. He goes, they loved it, but they went back to, you know.
Yeah.
And I don't, you know, you don't take it personally, but like there's things I could have maybe done.
Yeah. Again, I feel like this is all a part of knowing who you are, you mm-hmm. know, and knowing what you, I am not that person either. I'm not a, you know, I mean, my agents have suggested to me a couple times that I go to the affiliate Promax, you know, in Vegas. And I went not this past year, but the year before. And it was like, why am I here? You know, I don't have any affiliate clients and I'm not a person who wants to take your client away from you, you know, and that sort of like move over and let me meet, you know, I'm not that girl, you know, so, you know, that was almost, I mean, that was 18 months ago, right? And I remember just feeling like, oh, this isn't fitting. It doesn't fit, you know, this. And then when I started doing some games, when those, I mean, I'd been working on them, but when they came out, you know, and there was like, you know, a little bit of attention paid to them. And, you know, well, I made this decision to go to PAX West at the beginning of September this year, rather than go to the affiliate Promax. And it was like, because I feel like I have something, there's something here for me. I feel way more comfortable meeting developers than I do meeting, the directors of TV stations, of affiliate TV stations. And then I realized maybe I'm just a geek, you know, and that I feel like the whole geek world of games is where I belong, you know?
Well, you also have calling cards. I mean, I think
said. Yes, absolutely.
It helps. I know for me, it helps a lot when I have something I'm just coming off of.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
To be able to, you know.
Yeah, that's primary. Yeah, sure. If I'd had affiliate clients, it would have made a difference. But still, I have had affiliate clients, and I'm still uncomfortable in that world. And I think because it's ever shifting. It's so fast. It's so if somebody doesn't like you, it's like you're just done, you know. And it's so difficult for women to get and keep work in that arena, you know, that it always feels like a panic to me in a certain sense of like, I got to hold on to my clients and I got to, there's this stranger level of competitiveness
exactly.
to it that I think that's what I'm really uncomfortable with. Whereas in games, I feel like we're certainly all competing against each other, but I don't know. If the role is right for you, you're going to book it. Yeah.
I think the best performance is going to out for the most part,
yeah.
or, you know, or your past record and past performances
right.
or relationship to the directors, whatever
yeah.
that might be. I have a similar thing. I remember booking this, a campaign. It was a couple of spots for, I think it was ABC. It was many years ago. And I went to do the session and out comes the gal who was doing the voices. And I don't think she still is, but at the time, and oh my God, the looks I got.
Like, what are you doing
exactly.
on
and
my
she
territory?
Even said, yeah. what are you doing here? And I'm like, you know, and we actually happened to be at the same agency. I don't know if at the time you were there, but we were at the same agency for many years. And she would go in to my agent and go, whatever she reads on, I need to read on too. Now we were similar, but we also had different acting chops, you know,
yeah,
different approaches
sure.
to things.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I'm a little bit more comedic. I can do the comedic stuff. I can do the more
yes.
sardonic stuff
yes.
than this particular person
yeah.
could sort of do, which is why he would. But I always found that so interesting. You know,
yeah.
I get it. The promo world, you're fighting over a smaller piece of the pie.
Totally. Because it's, yeah.
But yeah, it's interesting how territorial that is. I don't feel that way even commercially necessarily.
Yes, in voiceover, I agree. And I don't know if it's because I participate in a workout group, you know, of working people. And we are all reading, the women in the group we're all reading on the same things, you know, and there's just a sense of, let me help you, you know, and there's something about that it builds trust and it builds this sense of, you know, if I can't get it, I hope you do, you know?
Well, it's this idea that there's only so much to go around.
Yeah.
And you know what? Yes, there is some truth to that.
Sure. Yeah.
But you can't, I just don't feel like you can look at, you know, this business that way, because then you're always coming from a place of lack.
Yeah.
You're
yeah.
always coming from a place of panic and
yes.
lack. And
yeah.
it's just...
And comparing. And wherever there's that comparing, it's somebody's either better than you or worse than you. And it's a strange thing that it does to your psyche,
it's
you know?
I have to say, I had a very early on, this is before I was even doing commercials or voiceover. I was in Chicago and I was auditioning for Shakespeare, of all things. And I was waiting in the theater lobby with another gal. We're just chatting. It was very, very pleasant until I asked her what piece she was doing. And then like her hackles went up. She's like, I never tell anybody, you know, what I'm doing. And I don't know if I said it at the time. I don't think I did because I wasn't quite as snarky then as I am now. But I wanted to go, did you find some special Shakespeare that no one else has found? Because
right.
there's only so many women's monologues to go around.
Right.
And I remember in that moment realizing it really was one of those crystallized aha, as Oprah would say, aha moments of like, you and I could wear the same clothes and go in and do the same monologue and it wouldn't matter. Because we're going to bring different things to it, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Comes back again to who are you? What's your unique experience in life? You're the only person who can bring what you bring to a role. Yeah.
And that's part of that learning curve, you know, when you're, you know, you've done some coaching and teaching, and mm-hmm. I certainly have, and I shared with you, I've taught at the conservatory for years mm-hmm. through SAG-AFTRA.
Yeah.
And you get a lot of folks who really are just coming in and wanted to say, well, let me see what voiceover is about.
Yes.
I give them this kind of overview. And so the idea is, you know, they want instant. They want a voiceover. Some of them want it right away.
Yeah.
They want to take, you know, there are certain schools here that like take level one, level two, then we'll get you a demo. And I'm like, no.
Don't do it.
No, 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 no.
Yeah.
Because what you want to do is you got to find that comfort level of who you are in the microphone so that you feel comfortable. We're always going to feel competition, but at the same time, it doesn't get in the way of your performance. It doesn't come in the booth with you because you are fully possessed of, I'm just going to do my thing. I'm just going to do my thing. That's where I'm at. You know, I think the last, you know, I kind of like when I was doing commercials and then voiceover, you know, I could kind of separate that from like my being an actor, you know, that sort of thing. Cause it's like, that's to pay the bills. And, you know, it's right. more about what, for a long time, I was kind of was like, ah, it's just about the way I look. And then I started to sort of, people did it for me first, but then I started to like own the facts. Like, you know, I'm good at that.
Yeah.
I'm good at like improvising, reading a moment. I know how to come into the room. There is a certain skill.
Yes.
Those of us who work a lot commercially, yes, it's a numbers game. Yes, it can be about what we look like. But I also know that I up my chances because I know how to come in the room and deliver. So it's the same thing with VO in that we have to find that comfort level to sort of be like, okay, I'm comfortable enough. Just I'm just going to do my thing. But the last place was TV and film. That was really hard. Like my ego of, you know, my master's degree and all the kind of stuff was, it was really hard to keep going out for, I mean, I've done okay. I'm very happy. I'm very grateful. But, you know, I'm, you know, some guest stars, the occasional recurring.
Yeah.
But that is much less. Again, the business has completely changed. And it was really hard on my little actor ego for the longest time. And I had to, as a friend of mine says, shift the paradigm.
Yeah.
And I, you know, and I'm making this motion with Kay again, because it's like, and it would flip back. I'd get an audition, customer number one, you know, two lines. And you're like, but I would go in the room and there were all these actresses whose stage work I had seen and they were phenomenal. I'm like, okay, we're all here. We're all here.
Yeah.
So shift the paradigm again, you know? Yeah. So that's been kind of the hardest, but that has sort of dropped in where it's like, you know what? Worst ways to make a living.
Yeah.
You know, I sometimes have joked that, you know, it's lost some of its charms. But you know what? I had an audition yesterday at Disney for a new show to playing a librarian. It was two scenes. Fabulous. These casting directors are just, they're two of the most lovely women to be in the room with.
That's
I've worked
great.
For them a couple of times. They actually cast Blackish. I did Blackish a couple of years back for them. And as I was driving into the lot, I had this, again, this moment of like, you're so not done. You're like, I got such a kick out of playing with this character, out of this, out of, you know, all the, you know, like I was looking forward to going into the room. Like, you're so not done.
Yeah. Isn't that funny?
It's like, that starts to be about ego. That starts, you know, because if you have folks in the business, I have, you know, I have friends who I went to college with who are massively famous, who have just won their fourth Emmy Award.
Oscar winners.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's just kind of, you know, we call it right sizing, you know, putting yourself, it's like not, we're not, we either want to be, I'm the worst or I'm the best. It's like, how about you just be you?
Yeah. How about that? How about that?
How about I just be me?
I do think there's a point at which it's like, it's partly just having done it for so long
exactly.
where you go, you know, I'm a little sick of this today, you know? And I've had the same experience of just like, then you get a piece of copy or you get a role and you go, oh my God, that was fun. And then again, you have that thought like, no, I'm in, you know, I'm in. I'm not going anywhere and I'm not giving up and I'm not throwing in the towel and I'm not retiring, you know? But those, there are just those little moments. Everybody gets tired of their job every once in a while, you know? And I think it holds true for us, journey women. Actors as well. So,
you know, like you said, it's like when we've been doing it this long and you know, and I, you know, you try to tell someone who's getting started, get on the microphone, the more you get on, the more you relax in, you find it, you know, on the one hand, it's like, I'm just going to do me. I'm just going to do my thing. You know, you like trust that. But on the other hand, it also can be like, geez, you know, you're a little over it.
Yeah.
I like to say, to another VO friend of mine, it's like on a daily basis, we sort of like get the voices that come in and like, you know, more work is non-union, more celebrities. And you're like, you just like, okay, excellent. Thanks for the input.
Yeah.
I'm now going to go do my job.
Yeah, exactly.
And leave it up to the powers that be.
Yes, absolutely. Well, it's time to play Beehive Roulette.
Oh, my stars.
Right? All right. So I'm going to set up my little roulette wheel.
I was wondering what that was when I came in.
It's all part of the plan. Okay, it's time for Beehive Roulette. Mary has been apprised of the rules of the game. So we're about to give a first little spin, getting my questions all ready. So, all right, Mary Weiss.
What a sound.
Right?
33.
All right. Whoops. What's your favorite type of food?
Ice cream.
that's so great.
It's ridiculous.
Ice cream as a food group. That's fantastic.
Oh, you meant as a food group.
No, it's fine. That's a perfect, you can.
I am a complete sugar addict. It's the thing I have to keep trying to.
I had really good ice cream at this place called Afters in Pasadena. It's like in a, it's in a converted like gas station. That sounds really delicious, doesn't it? But it's like, you know, the setup, the little, it's like the little, mm-hmm. and it's just ice cream. And you just walk up and they have, it's like one scoop, two scoop, three scoop. You can choose a waffle cone and they've got like six flavors. That's it. But it's really good ice cream. It's called Afters.
I have a
list.
Way too close to my house is Cool House.
I don't know Cool House.
Cool House is crazy. They have all kinds of wonderful artists and they've done like mascarpone with balsamic drizzle and things like that. But I stick to, they also make these ice cream sandwiches and they do snickerdoodle with salted caramel ice cream.
Oh my God.
Yeah, forget it.
That sounds fantastic.
Round and round and round she goes. Number two.
What's your sign?
Cancer.
Wow, when's your birthday?
July 22nd.
Isn't this just ridiculous?
That was a good year.
What's your favorite cocktail?
Well, when I did drink, you know what's funny is wherever I lived, I swear to God, like my cocktails would change. Like when I was in New York, I really got into like Scotch on the Rocks.
Okay, yeah.
And then in Los Angeles, it started becoming things like Appletini type, those sorts of drinks.
Yeah.
So
they went with the...
Chicago was beer.
Oh, that's funny. I assume that you're a Cubs fan. Just,
yeah.
You know, it's possible you could be a White Sox fan.
No.
And okay. I just wanted to clear that up. So that really turned from a drink into who's your favorite baseball team?
Okay. Well, we don't need that question.
Yeah, we don't need that question. All right.
I'm going again. This is great. Number five.
What is your favorite lunch meat? I don't know why that question always makes me laugh.
Okay, right now it's turkey breast. I'm like totally a turkey breast.
Okay. Do you like smoked or?
I actually do like the smoked.
Yeah.
But I gotta say, growing up, I couldn't wait for my mom to come home to get the groceries. She'd always come up, like there were five of us, five kids. So it was like a huge bag. And my brother and I would be the ones to help her because she would always have a huge stack of chicken loaf. Chicken loaf was like sliced turkey, but like literally you can see where they just kind of like smashed and compressed chicken parts into the, and I would always peel a couple pieces off of chicken loaf off.
That is so funny.
Just the fact that it's called loaf.
Yeah.
Chicken loaf.
Loaf. What part is the loaf of the chicken?
I'm not sure.
I'd like some chicken breast and some chicken loaf.
So they make a lovely loaf. Ladies and gentlemen, number 39.
Summer, winter, spring, or fall?
Fall. Autumn. It feels like autumn. Twelve.
Do you like stinky cheese?
I do. Like a good runny brie. Does that count as a stinky cheese? It's more of a soft cheese.
It is a soft cheese, but...
What's a stinky cheese? Tell me.
A stinky cheese is like a blue cheese. It's like gorgonzola.
I do like a gorgonzola. In moderation.
In moderation.
If I get cab salad, I always ask for the blue cheese on the side.
On the side, but you don't say no blue cheese.
No.
You just say on the side.
I just want... That's because I don't want it to overwhelm the
Understood.
Salad.
Understood. It can be overpowering.
It can.
All right.
All right, then 49.
What's your favorite time of day?
I have become a morning person. I never would have guessed that ages ago. And so I am up at 6.
All right, two more.
That was a lame spin, but we're going to take it. 25.
Who is your loudest friend?
Laura Coyle.
She called you out, Laura Coyle.
Laura Coyle, who I actually do. She's a coach, and she does... a podcast called Diving In.
Oh, cool.
And I often do it with her.
Okay.
Okay. Lucky 13.
How many push-ups can you do? I'm not going to make you do them. Say 100, and I still won't make you do them.
In one set, I'd probably be good for, I'm going to say at least 20. After breaking the leg, I started working back with a trainer who I've worked with off and on.
Okay.
And we do push-ups, and I can get 15 out I think I can make it to 20.
Okay, here's the last question, and I get to pick it, and it is a la James Lipton. If heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
You did okay, kiddo.
Mary Weiss, thank you so much for being in the Beehive. Okay. Such a pleasure to have you here.
It was great.
Can people find you? Can they like Twitter or are you a social media person?
I'm on Instagram, though it's a lot of cat pictures. I do some Twitter, though. It's Maritzky22 on Twitter.
Is it just your name on Instagram? Or
I'm not sure, but I think if you punch in Mary Weiss, that's okay. M-A-R-I.
M-A-R-I. That's great. Well, okay. So you can find her on Instagram, and if you're lucky, you find her on Twitter.
Facebook, you know.
Okay, fantastic. Thank you so much, Mary Weiss.
Thank you, Kay Bass.
Thanks for joining me today in the Beehive. For podcast notes, pictures, and more information on my guests, visit the podcast website, thebeehivepodcast.com. Find me at my website, kbess.com. Follow me on Twitter at kbess and subscribe to my channel on YouTube. If you've a mind to, please post a review of the podcast on iTunes. Kind words are like honey, sweet to the soul and good for the bones. Come back for more Women in Voiceover next time in the Beehive.